Today is the 6th of July, and we're going to cover briefly here a few things that have happened on this day in history. 1699, on this day, Captain William Kidd, the pirate, was captured in Boston, Massachusetts, and deported back to England. If you're going to be a pirate, that's a pretty cool name to have. William Kidd.
Kidd the Pirate.
Kidd the Pirate.
Yeah.
Pirate the Kid. 1777, on this day, British forces captured Fort Ticonderoga during the American Revolution. The only thing that really comes to mind for me about that is the pencils that are called the Ticonderogas.
Right, yeah.
Which doesn't say much for my history knowledge about that event, but that is the thing that jumps out to me, mainly because in fifth grade, our teacher, he was an older man, and I think it was his last year of teaching, so he was done. he was certainly done after he had us as a class. He would always, he wouldn't say, get your pencils. He'd say, get out your number two Ticonderogas. He said that every time. And so every time I see Ticonderoga, I think of Mr. Shep was his name.
Actually, in grade school, because there are different brands of pencils, and especially as a young person, the brand you get says a lot about who you are to everyone else. And,
yeah.
Usually we went with the cheapest brand, which is fine, and I was proud of it. But
it was the old charcoal.
No, it was like the no-name pencils. They actually say no name on them.
And oh, really?
You can like snap them by just looking at them. They'll fall apart in your hands. But the Ticonderogas were like they were the top brand. They were like the Mercedes-Benz of pencils. And I remember getting them a few times, and just hardy, and looks like they were actually made of real wood. So, but I just remember that as a kid, once you get those pencils, you just hang on to them.
The other thing that was a status symbol in grade school was crayons. You know, they say, get out your crayons. So if you pull out the 12 pack, you know, but you get your neighbor next to you pulling out the like 64 pack and then the 100 and whatever pack and it has a sharpener on the back. I didn't know you had to sharpen crayons, but you could sharpen them and then. But it made it more confusing, too, because they'd say, you know, color that blue. Well, I got one blue, but the kid next to me has, like, 15 options for blue. So, in a way, they had it better, but in a way, it was more complex. More decisions to make.
Yeah. Yeah, it made more problems for them in the long run. Because I remember they would have to, kids would have to bring, like, a separate backpack just for their crayon box. It kept getting bigger and bigger because they'd bring, like, the 120-pack and all those things.
Was the Trapper Keeper popular in your day? Do you remember that? That binder that people would have that would Velcro clothes and had all the folders? And
I think that was out of style, or it was becoming obsolete when I was getting starting to use those types of
things. That was the big, big thing. If you had a Trapper Keeper, which I did not. I think eventually I might have gotten one, like kind of on the tail end when it didn't matter anymore. but the Trapper Keeper was it. Folders. There was a calendar in there, I think, maybe a ruler that was attached to something. And then they had, like, fancy designs on the outside. For some reason, that was, like you talk about the Mercedes-Benz of pencils. That was the Mercedes-Benz of keeping your stuff organized. And I was telling my children about it the other day because my daughter has a little binder. And I said, oh, is that one of those Trapper Keeper things? She didn't know what that was. So I was trying to tell her about the cool Trapper Keepers.
The mystical lore of Trapper Keepers.
Yeah. Yeah. They had like a little pocket on the side too where you could, it was a special pocket you could put stuff in and close it. And then you had like a crayon bag. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you could do. And they had the commercials. They'd always play the commercials during kids' programming. You know, boy, I always wanted one of those. It's funny, those things that you want as a kid, you never really can replace that, you know, as an adult. I could go buy a Trapper Keeper right now if they exist, but I don't care. It's not
right,
the same, that the moment is past.
That's true.
But there's a lot of things from a childhood that are that way, I think. And so it's always kind of interesting to look back on some of those things. 1928, on this day, The Lights of New York was previewed in New York's Strand Theater. It was the first all-talking movie. So that would have been probably, well, amazing, but somewhat probably frightening. I would think you've never seen people in a recording speak before. Well, they'd seen it before, but this was the first all-talking movie. So it'd be just interesting to see people's reactions to those types of things that that we take for granted now. 1933, the first All-Star Baseball game was held in Chicago. The American League beat the National League 4-2. That time of year is coming up again. And in 1985 on this day, Martina Navratilova won her fourth consecutive Wimbledon singles title. For the tennis fans that are out there, that tournament is played on grass. And different surfaces have different people that excel at that particular surface. And I remember seeing her as a kid. She won quite a few of those. And 1997 on this day, we're going to talk about this one a little bit more. The Mars Pathfinder released Sojourner, a robot over the surface of Mars. The spacecraft landed on the red planet on July the 4th. And this is always interesting because they are looking out there in the universe for answers about human life. And even today, the Washington Post said that after 5 years hurtling through space, NASA's Juno probe slipped into orbit around Jupiter, the biggest, oldest planet in our cosmic neighborhood, on the 4th of July. As the world awoke Tuesday, scientists were abuzz with the possibility that the basketball court-sized spacecraft would help us understand how our solar system and all its planets came to be, and even life itself. So they're hoping that by looking at Pluto, they're going to figure out where we came from. It is interesting to see how they're looking out into space for these things. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about some of that history with Mars in particular, and look at man's attempts to find life out in the universe.
Yeah, it is a fascinating subject and something that really captivated America, especially in the 60s, 70s. Going to the moon, obviously, that's, I think, the highlight of, it'll always be the highlight of the NASA program and the organization. But going to Mars is really the next big step. They've been to Mercury and Venus, but those are very inhospitable environments. So they wanted to go to Mars, and the Soviets actually were the first ones there. They had a satellite around Mars and even landed a small spacecraft lander there and communicated with it for 12 minutes before it died. But still, it's a big first step. But with Pathfinder, it was the first one where it was actually feasibly proved that they could do some more work on Mars with these different rovers. And it is pretty neat to look at the pictures and to see a different planet because, I mean, Mars is so different. The soil is orange or reddish because it rusts, actually, from just the different iron oxides and everything in it.
Reminds me of Oklahoma's soil.
Right. Yeah.
Very similar.
Exactly. Maybe that's Oklahoma is Mars.
Maybe we're on Mars.
But even the geography of Mars is really fascinating. Has a huge trench that's like, I think, five times deeper than the and bigger than the what's the one in Arizona?
The Grand Canyon.
Yes, thank you. Or is that in Nevada?
Boy, you put me on the spot. It spreads around out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's big.
It's in America. We know that. Sorry, I can't believe I forgot that. But they also have found a mountain on Mars that's the size of Texas. And it's this huge, huge scale of these different landforms. And they've looked at just how Mars was formed. They learned about different aspects of the planet, which is fascinating. But they always go to these other planets to try to discover life, if we can live there. They look for solutions or answers to Earth on these different planets. And they haven't found anything, though. And there's always these articles and statements that come out like, oh, they found life when it's maybe some dead bacteria. They find water or other kind of fluids on these different planets. There's ice and these... there is like a fluid running on Mars. They're not too sure what it is yet. So they have found certain things which are fascinating themselves to see the universe. It's very good to explore that and for us to think about it because it is important. But it is just interesting how you can go to a dead planet because that's what all these other planets are. They're just dead. They're empty. They're just full of debris and like scars of terrible destruction, really, and think they can find life out there or the meaning of our lives. And it's just an interesting approach that they take. And in a sad way, it's missing the whole point that because it is a big scientific achievement, but it's with that intent in mind, it's all in vain, really.
Yeah, really what it does, and Herbert Armstrong points this out in some write-ups that he did, is it just proves the Bible true. because the history that's recorded in the Bible is one of destruction in the universe. And what do you see when you look up there besides Earth? You see destruction. And so there's a lot of really good write-ups about that at thetrumpet.com. The Incredible Human Potential, very important book to read. There's also one on our incredible universe potential. And there's just a lot of good write-ups that you can look at. Some booklets, there's some great pictures of space and some of that history as well. And it is amazing out there, but there's nothing out there. it's dead. And so it doesn't mean it'll stay that way, but that's the way it is right now. From everything they see, and the further they go out, that's just what it proves. So it's really interesting to consider some of that history. 1997, the Mars Pathfinder released Sojourner, a robot rover on the surface of Mars.